Succession number 10602, Reel 16.
Well, I've been coming back from the rifle range carrying ammunition boxes. Can you continue with the story?
Well, we just got about halfway from the range to the barracks when we heard this sound in the grass, and I shouted at the lads to drop the boxes and fix the bayonets. And of course, one of the lads said, "What is it?" I said, "I'm not sure what it is, but," I said, "we're not going to be caught, you know, unready." And when we heard it, it was the sound coming from this place was like a steam engine blown off steam. Now, it was an unearthly sound for a place where we were at. Anyhow, when we got back to camp, we didn't chase the sound because it was going away from us. It seemed as if it must have been quite close and we'd disturbed it, and it must have turned and gone away from us. But the sound from it was really frightening. Anyhow, when we got back into camp and I mentioned about this sound and what I'd done, I was told I'd most probably have been quite close to a cobra. Now, thinking that might be strange, the lad in our platoon called Satchwell was the battalion marksman, and he was the armourer sergeant's helper. And when rifles, which had been maintained by the armourer sergeant, he and Satchwell would go to the miniature range and test the rifles. And one day they were both on the small range, and a cobra popped its head up, and Satchwell shot it. So that was two instances where there could have been cobras, which one would justify the statement of the other. And the Indian soldier who had died, well, the Hindus said it was a crate, so I mean I couldn't say them why they should lie about it, because the death, and as we understood, the crate is the most deadly snake in India. I don't know whether it is or not, mind, but it was always considered, and it's not a very big snake, it's a very small snake.
Was that with particular problem you mentioned these stories about snakes, were they common enough to cause concern?
Well, they weren't common enough for concern, but you did keep your eyes open. I can't recall any other than that one that was on the small rifle range. I can't recall anyone seeing one anywhere in the barracks. There may have been, but I simply don't know of anybody who did.
Were you ever given any briefing about
these things? No. No, there was no briefings about them. No.
How long did you spend in the hill station?
Maybe 2 or 3 months. It was a short period. You know, then you went back to Bombay, and the other lot would come up.
During that time, you had your gun course. Was there anything else that you did whilst you were up there?
Well, again, there was the contest with the guard mountain, the extra man. There was only the one guard, but there was the extra man. But if he succeeded in being chosen as the cleanest man 3 successive times, he was excused guard mountain for 3 months. So he didn't do any guards for 3 months, but they caught him out. He did garrison military police. So when you did, you know, if you were lucky enough, I did once. I got away with it in 35, I think it was. Must have been 35. And I was in garrison military police at Doolally.
I'll come back to you a second about garrison military police. You mentioned cleanest man.
Aye.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the cleanest man chosen by the officer mounting the guard.
Does that mean the best turnout?
Cleanest, smartest, cleanest. What he thought was the cleanest and smartest. Mind, when I say that, you know, sometimes a man who was really outstandingly clean would have one small fault. And when they were looking to choose the man, if they found that small fault, that poor lad would get punished. He'd be charged for being dirty on parade. And you know it was ridiculous. Because nobody was ever dirty on Guard Mountain. I don't care what they say. Nobody, because the mates helped them to get dressed and cleaned, you know. It was a kind of pride. You know, a soldier there, it was leathers. You wore leathers, leather belt, leather pouches, leather rifle sling, and they would be highly polished. And if yours weren't good enough, what the lads in your barrack room thought, your mates would swap you, and if theirs was cleaner than yours, they would help you. You know, sometimes it's a bit of a problem that, because you had your numbers on the back, and if the officers decide to look at the numbers, then you were in trouble. But
can you recall that happening to you? Where you
were not to me, no. But this was it. You know, I always think any soldier, I don't care what regiment he is, on guard, they always turn out thoroughly clean. And why any of them's ever punished is beyond belief.
Yes, did these sort of punishments cause resentment?
No, the lads knew. They knew that if they were caught, they would get punishment. I can tell you a thing which happened at Doolally in our company. It wasn't during my platoon, mind, but at Doolally, they were like long bungalows, you know, one platoon next to the other all the way. And two platoons could be in the same kind of bungalow. They were only single-story buildings. And nearly every Saturday morning there would be a kit inspection. Sometimes it would be the platoon commanders. Then it would be the company commanders, maybe once a month. And maybe about once or twice a year the CO would be of his inspection. And this Saturday morning it was the company commander's inspection, and two lads, they were both absolutely clean lads, you know. When you looked at theirs, you would say, I wonder if I could ever get my kit like that, you know, because they were that clean and that smart. And these two lads had a little bet. I don't know what the value of the bet was, but be nothing. Who would have the cleanest cot? That's what they used to say for the kit inspection. One would say, I'll bet there are threepence or 3 rupees or 4 rupees or 5 rupees, my cut's better than yours when the company commander comes around. And the company commander saw just one little thing different in each of them. And they both picked the boots up off the lockers and knocked all the gear out and both got put straight in the guard room. But that was the feeling, you know, that these men, well, you know, our officers could do it as pick them up, because they knew the men wouldn't, you know, would go out of the way to be clean and sure. It was pride. And that was one thing. I'm not saying the other lads felt that way, but I always felt that way. You know, a man can only be so clean, and he can only do so much.
Yes, that's why I asked. I wonder whether people who obviously made such an effort and said no one went on guard duty without being clean, and yet they'd be picked up for a very minor instances, really very petty things.
Yeah.
Did that ever cause friction? You've given me one example where...
No, I don't think so. No, they just accepted it. They said, maybe I've missed it, you know. I mean, an incident like that happened to me. I mean, and I got punished. It wasn't... I think it was just the system, not common sense, really. But I had a rifle issued to me which should never have been out of the quartermaster stores.
Why not?
Well, it was unserviceable. Now, when a rifle in India becomes unserviceable, there's a markings on a part of the rifle which is starred. Now, if that star is still on that rifle, any inspecting officer knows it's a faulty weapon. Now, I had this rifle, and I had done numerous guards, and had never been checked, and it was a starred rifle. And when the inspecting officer, or the adjutant, whichever it was, you would just say, starred barrel, sir. And this day, I was checked for having a dirty rifle. Well, there was no way I could clean it. So I said to the officer, as I'd said to the others, I said, it was a starred barrel. Makes no difference, it's dirty. So I was charged for having a dirty rifle on guard mounting. I was taken in front of my company commander, and I said, the rifle is starred, sir. I said, it cannot be cleaned. I said, I've done any amount of guards, any amount of parades here, I said, and I've never been checked for a dirty rifle before. And he called the quartermaster in, the colour sergeant. He said, what's this about this rifle being issued to this man if it's starred? And when they checked the records up, that rifle should have been returned to the rifle factory before I'd even left England or maybe enlisted. And I got 3 or 4 days extra drill parades for something that was no fault of my own. You know, little things like that. It annoyed you at the time, but you accepted, because there's no way you could beat them. You can't beat them. You know, you have to accept the discipline. It's there.
However, despite all that, you won the prize for being 3 times on guard.
Oh, yes, that was a dole, Ali. Yes.
And that meant that you became a
garrison military policeman.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me what that duty comprised of?
Yes. We had to go into Doolally Bazaar at retreat to say there was no troops in. And we had to check every train that passed through Doolally Station to see if there was any Europeans or any servicemen on that train. And you had to enumerate in a book kept in the station and where they were coming from and where they were going to. Again, that was really security in case they were missing before they got to the journey's end. Yes?
When you say you had to check the trains for Europeans, does that mean you actually walked down, when the train pulled into the station, you walked down?
Right through the whole train. Yes, the whole train.
And what did you ask Europeans that you
You just asked them where are you from and where you're going to. And you had a little book and you just put down one, you know, there. Then when you got to the station book where it was like a register, you entered it in there.
And what about their identity? How did you establish their identity?
You didn't ask them for their identity. You just accepted them as they were.
You'd ask them their name and...
Name, and that was it. Well,
can you recall when you were doing this military police duty, any incidents that occurred?
There was, well, just one incident to the lads. I got myself, I nearly got put on a charge for that. It was one night in the week, there used to be a whiz drive held. The Indian Army Service Corps Europeans used to run a whiz drive in their area, and we were always invited to go down and join them. Now, I'm not sure whether it was more or less like a social night for the people who wanted to play a whist. And we used to go down to the whist drive, some of us, when I was on normal duty, not when I was on garrison police, because I had to be on police. You know, you're on duty every night. And I'd gone to this whist a number of times, and one night while I was on the military police, it was quite a distance from the garrison military police or the detachment's headquarters where the military police were billeted and the guard room, which was the first building of the Doolally camp. And you know, wide open country, wider than anything you've seen, hills, and there's a wide road, a moonlight night. Two or three of these lads was going back and they were just singing, nothing more, just singing, and the orderly officer passed them. And he came straight to the garrison police and he said to me, I want all those men charged. I said, what for? He says, they're causing a disturbance. Now, singing, going in about a mile between barracks, out in the wild, you know, you've got to see it to believe that it was wild. And these men were just singing, going back to camp after having a canny night out. Well, I wouldn't charge them. You know, I said, no. I said, I'm not going to put them on a charge. I said, if you want to charge them, sir, you can charge them. I said, I am not going out there to charge them. I said, there's no reason for it. No reason whatsoever. And of course, I got myself a bit disliked for it, but not with the lads, but the officers thought I was too easy, I think.
Were you disciplined at all?
No. I got a good telling off the officer that was in charge of the garrison military police, but he said he never wanted to hear it a bit again. And I told him, I said, if it happened the same that night, I said, I wouldn't charge a man for that. I said, if they were being cursing and swearing, using foul language, if they were drunk and disorderly, I would have said, yes, but I said, they were only singing. I said, I was there when they went past. I said, they said good night to me as they went past. I said, they weren't drunk or anything like that. I said, they hadn't had any drink. I said, they were just singing. And I said, if you've got to charge men for singing, I said, what's the world coming to? Or something, you know, very much like it. But...
Can I ask you how long your period of service in this as a garrison?
3 months. 3 months, that was the length of time I was... excuse guard duties, that's what I said, there was a catch at the beginning.
And for that 3 months, you mentioned the different things you did for duty. How much time was spent on these activities, like the trains, for example, and also for walking around the bazaar and so on?
Well, you went every night, or every night but from retreat. Just before retreat, you went in, and if you saw anybody in, you would say, mind, it's nearly time, lads. You know, you'd give them a friendly warning. You didn't just jump on them. The lads knew that to be out. But as I say, you know, as I said about Barrack Poor, you got to some of these people who would, bargaining was the... It was an awful thing, but, if you were in a hurry... But I cannot recall any of the military police there, the garrison police, charging anybody. You know, they were a pretty disciplined lot. And the trains, I cannot say exactly how many trains, but it was every train that went through, civilian or military trains, you went and saw them through, but you would just note the time the train arrived, the time the train left. You wouldn't bother to put the numbers down, because if it was a force, then they could look after themselves. But if it was individuals, you say that's another story. People going by ones or twos, so it's a different story. But with a detachment or something, company, or, you know, they could look after themselves, or fairly, they should have been. Now, there was a very holy city near Doolally, an Hindu city, Nasik city, and we were forbidden to even go to the outskirts of that one because of the religious feelings in that city. And that was definitely out of bounds, and I don't recall anybody ever going anywhere near it.
Well, was there any attempt to make sure that people didn't go anywhere near it?
No, there was no check. Not to my knowledge was there any check kept on it, but I think the emphasis on it being out of bounds was enough.
Were there any other parts of that region that were out of bounds that you had to patrol through and make sure people shouldn't be there?
No, there was no... camp perimeter, you know, the garrison perimeter. Now, we didn't deal, as garrison military police, we didn't deal within the unit's area, but we dealt with it outside the unit's area. You know, the Doolally detachment of the European regiment would be one area. The Hindu detachment would be another area. The military hospital would be another area. Then you'd have your service corps, or your ordnance corps would be another area. Now, their regimental police was responsible for those areas. But once they were out of those areas, they came under the garrison police. It was like Bombay or Calcutta. You had your regimental police within your perimeter of your unit. And outside that unit, you'd have your garrison police.
Did you have to wear any special uniform?
No, just a armband which had GMP on, Garrison Military Police. It was like taking the place of the military police, the Corps of Military Police in this country, but you didn't have military police out there, so there was Garrison Police. Now, if you had more than one unit, there would be members from each of those units would be on that Garrison Police. Wouldn't just be one regiment, it would be numbers from each regiment.
When you went out on a patrol, how many people would go?
One or two, maybe one. Mostly one there, because there was never any trouble. I suppose they would have been lifted if there'd been more. But generally one, two, no more than that.
Thank you. Were there any other things that you came to do whilst you were at Doolally or Bombay?
Well, not... The only other thing which had changed was from being an infantryman to learning to be a nurse and orderly, if that comes in that standard.
How did that come to happen?
Well, soldiers with more than 3 years to do in service and had the second certificate of education would replace soldiers who had been trained regimental nurse and orderlies who were returning to the regiment to go home. Usually what happened, young soldiers, if you like, younger soldiers with 3 years to do, would train to be a nurse and orderly, a regimental nurse and orderly, and he would remain there until his, if his regiment was still in India, he would remain where the hospitals were and would be a nurse and orderly until he finished his time. But I did a year there. Now, there was a funny thing about mine. I objected to going in the first place. I had an interview with my company commander and CEO, and I was told I would damn well obey orders, which I had to. When I got to the military hospital, I asked for an interview with the CEO there and asked if I could be returned to duty. And he said no. He said, you've been ordered here by your CEO. And he says, I'm your new CEO. And he says, you'll do as you're told and you'll carry out your duties. So I started training. Knew I couldn't get back. So I started training to be a nurse and orderly. I think I was a wee bit awkward at the time. That's not an understatement. It's not an overstatement, but it's not an understatement.
What do you
either.
Mean by being a wee bit awkward?
Well, I tried to do things the wrong way so that I would be returned to duty. Not doing anything deliberately sabotaging anything, but just being a wee bit awkward, I think, because it was women. The Queen, what is it, the Queen Alexandra's nursing corps, the QEA. And some of those women, you know, they were bitchy. And don't make any mistake about that. If they took a liking to a bloke, he could do no wrong. And if they took a dislike to a lad, whether it was medical corps or infantry. Now, I say that because I can explain certain things later on, but if they took a dislike to you, you could never do anything right. There was nothing you could do right. They would always refer, you were not as good as so-and-so, you were not as good as so-and-so doing this, you're not as good as so-and-so doing that. And then when you would be bed-making, which was one of the strict things you had to learn, a military bed was a military bed, and even in hospital it had to be done their way. And I know I used to do beds with one of the sisters, and she harped on every time, as soon as I picked the sheet up, doesn't matter which way I picked it up, I was wrong. I should have been court-martialed for this, by the way. So I picked the sheet up one morning, and I threw it at her. I said, no, you go and get private so-and-so and get him to do the bed. I said, I'm doing no more. She says, you'll be in front of the matron for this. I said, aye. I said, no, I expect I'm back to barracks tomorrow. Just like that. Well, they were equivalent to an officer. So, you know, I was in trouble there. I would have been in trouble in any case, because I'd more or less struck an officer, you know, by throwing the sheet at her.
Did you find it difficult to, having been in the army for so long, to find women giving you orders?
Oh, aye. Because, you see, we were taught not to speak to an officer unless spoken to. And when you were a nurse and orderly, you may have had to speak to an officer, which was a QA sister. But in true fact, you shouldn't speak to her unless she spoke to you, which to me was all rubbish. If you were nursing somebody who was seriously ill or someone had been seriously injured, you might need assistance, and they were the trained people. And you stand to attention waiting for her to say what's wrong or something. Well, that, to me, that's damn stupid. But anyhow, as I say...
Were you instructed that that's how to behave towards
that's
these?
All officers. Not one, but all officers. And they were equivalent to officers, from lieutenant up to major. I think the matron was classified as a major. Now, after that incident of throwing the sheet at the sister, I was ordered to attend the matron the next day. So I went to the matron, and she said, I've got a bad report about you. I said, yes, matron, you have. And I said, I'm not saying I didn't do it. She says, there must be a reason why you did it. She says, I know you don't want to be a nurse and orderly, but she says, there must be a reason when you throw a sheet at a sister. I said, yes. I said, there was a reason. And she said, what was that reason? I said, I had barely got onto the ward when I was detailed by Sister so-and-so, I forget her name now, but I said, she said, I didn't pick the sheet up like Private so-and-so. I said, well, Private so-and-so doesn't pick the sheet up like me. I says, neither would you, mate, and pick the sheet up the same as me or the sister. I says, we all have different ways of doing things. But I said, she kept harping on, but I said, this is not the first time. I says, this is every day I've had to work with that sister. I've had nothing else but criticism. So I said, Matron, will you recommend me for the return to my regiment? I says, irrespective of whether I'm punished by the CO or not, I said, I would prefer to go back to my regiment and take orders from men, not women. She says, you've been chosen to come here, she says, and you'll damn well stop here. And you will do your duty here. So there was no way of getting out. I couldn't get past the CO, I couldn't get past the matron. So another night I was on duty, and a sister came in, and as you'll see, you're not supposed to speak to them unless they speak to you, being an officer. So I was sat at the table in the office. I never spoke. I waited there saying, good evening, or are you coming around visiting your patients in the ward? I was the only orderly on. And she never said anything. She just walked in, walked out, and I followed her around. She went to her office, which is attached to the officer's ward. And I stood at the door. She didn't even say anything. I went back to the ward. Next morning I was on a charge, being asleep on duty. So I said to the matron again, I was in front of the matron because the nursing come under the matron for the start of discipline under the CO. So I said, I will tell you exactly what time Sister Malone came onto the ward. I'll tell you exactly the time she left the ward. And I'll tell you the exact time Sister Malone sat down to make her report. She says, didn't you speak to her? I said, soldiers don't speak to officers unless officers speak to the soldier first. I said, that's the orders I'm under. I said, that's the discipline I'm under in my regiment. And she says, I'll confirm this, whether this is right or not. I said, well, she started writing her orders within seconds of the last time I gave you. She says, how do you know it was the time? I said, well, the ward clock's there. And I said, I looked at the ward clock as she was walking out of the door, and I said, her office is less than 10 yards from where I was at. So I said, you had 10 yards walking time to the time she sat down, to the time of that clock. And I said, you will find my time is as near as her time, as her report was made. And when the matron looked, it was. So she said, why didn't you damn well speak to her? I said, why didn't she speak to me? So shortly after that, the Welsh regiment was coming to play in a rugby cup final or a rugby tournament in Bombay. And they were going out to one of the beaches for swimming when the Indian driver had an accident, and it was a number of the Welsh regiment was badly injured. Some of them were